Well, brothers and sisters, friends and family, I hold in my hand today the good book of the greatest sayings and teachings ever known to humankind. Is it the blueprint for the mystic's path? Well, I have one word for you. Actually, I have one acronym for you, WWJD. What would Jefferson do? Now, just imagine for a moment you're the third president of the United States. And what you like to do before you retire each and every evening is you read something inspiring. Often it's spiritual in nature. Often it's the King James Version of the Bible. But something in the last few years has not been sitting right with you. So one night, you decide you're going to go up into your study and you put on your spectacles. You light your candles, you open up your King James Version of the Bible, and in one hand you have a knife, and in the other hand a jar of glue. And what you begin to do is you cut away, and you cut away, and you cut away, because what you are doing is you're creating a sacred text all on your own, or all for yourself. You're basically going into the New Testament, the canonical Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And what you're doing is you're creating a chronological edition of Jesus's greatest hits, the parables, the most wise sayings, the greatest teachings are being placed together in this Bible. Now, as you cut away and cut away, you're taking things out of the Bible. So, for example, Thomas Jefferson ditched the entire Old Testament. He also got rid of the virgin birth. Many of the miracles as well. When it came to walking on water, turning water into wine, the fishes and the loaves, even the resurrection, he felt were not important to his soul's journey. He even got rid of things such as original sin and predestination, meaning it's already been determined whether you're going to hell or heaven or not. He even gets rid of the revelation entirely, just cuts it right out of the Bible. Now, maybe if he had waited around another 50 or 60 or 70 years, he would have bumped into Charles and Merle Fillmore or Edgar Cayce, and they would have walked him through the symbology of the revelation and some of these miracles, because they do have import to our human soul. But for Jefferson, he felt they didn't need to be there for the moral and ethical teachings that he needed. So what did he do? He ended up taking this Bible, and this took place over a number of years, even after he left the White House, and he actually pasted them together in a book, and he did it in Latin, Greek, French, and English. Wow. Greek, Latin, French, and English, and he did it all without Google Translate. How did that happen? Now, what ended up coming of this, of course, is what he called The Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth. You can see up here on the screen the actual original writing of Thomas Jefferson, The Life and Morals of Jesus of Nazareth. This was his own personal sacred text. This is what spoke to his soul. He was a man of the Enlightenment. He was a man of science and reason, but he was also a man who pursued the sacred. So this is the epitome of his spiritual journey, and it wasn't that unusual because in his time, the spiritual proclivities of those days was deism and Unitarianism and Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism and the inner light of Quakerism. There was something about that time period that was very freeing. So how many of us today could have done what Jefferson had done? How many of us would have the courage and take any sacred text whatsoever and gone up and cut it up? Now, some people would say, wow, that's heretical. That's eomaniacal. You can't create your own sacred text, even though the churches had been doing it themselves for many years. But instead, let's look at it differently. Maybe Jefferson was taking the individuated path of the mystic. How free would we be today? And let's also consider that Jefferson ended up creating the first Bible in Western civilization that was the teachings about Jesus, the sayings of Jesus. The Jefferson Bible is not about the stories of Jesus so much. It's not about the miracles. It's not about the religion that was started in his name. It was not about what it meant to other religions in the world. It's about the moral and ethical teachings, the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, do unto others, love one another. How you treat the least among you is your measure in life. So this Jefferson Bible was given to his family. In fact, the funny thing about this is that Jefferson didn't share this with a whole lot of people when he was alive, a lot of confidants. Many of his family members did not even know that this Bible existed in his family until after he passed away. And then it stayed in the family for some 70 years until his great-granddaughter actually sold it to the Smithsonian. And now the American people own this great Jefferson Bible. So again, this is a Bible about the teachings of Jesus and the sayings of Jesus. Where have you heard that before? Well, if you listen to Reverend Pauly here on any given Sunday, that's what unity is about, right? We don't talk about so much about the life of Jesus so much and what happened to him. It's about what did he teach? What did he share? And where else have we heard that here? Well, if you've taken a course here at Unity, you may have been introduced to the Gnostic Gospels. Now, this is a great treasure trove. The Gnostic Gospels are gospels that are found in Nag Hammadi, Egypt in 1945. And they've been buried in urns for well over 1,000 years. Obviously, someone felt that they may have been pursued as a heretic, so they had to bury and hide these Bibles or these gospels. And what ended up happening was they found that these Gospels went back probably to 150 AD, and maybe even sooner than that and earlier than that. You know, the canonical Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, were written about 70, 80, 90 years after Jesus was on the earth. These Gospels, according to some scholars, say actually predate the canonical Gospels. And what does that have to say about our spirituality? What does that have to do with Thomas Jefferson? Well, here's what it has to do. A lot of these Gospels, especially Gospel of Thomas, really was only about Jesus' sayings and teachings. And the Gospel of Philip, along with Thomas, took things such as the virgin birth and the resurrection and called them naive misunderstandings. Now look, I understand that Christianity has a tough time with alternative Gospels, right? So this is uncomfortable, and I understand that alternative Gospels will make people nervous when it comes to understanding who Jesus was. But can we accept Jesus without the miracles? Just for a moment, if you will. Let's put the miracles aside on the side burner for a moment. Let's say they're true. Maybe they're not true. If they're not true, what have you got? Some people would say we have nothing. Thomas Jefferson would say you've got everything right here. Even if you don't have these miracles, even if you don't have the Savior myth, even if those things are not true, the greatest way to live your life is to live according to the teachings of this man that we call Jesus. The wisdom is all here. You know, recently there have been studies released by Gallup. You know that Gallup and the Pew Foundations love to take the pulse of American spirituality and religion. And two really stunning stories are actually research data. One says that now in America, less than half of our population belong to churches or synagogues or mosques. They're no longer members of houses of worship. This other study is even more dramatic. Less than half the country says that religion is very important. Something like 43% of the people think that religion is very important. And we're talking about just maybe 3 or 4 decades ago, over 70%. Now, look, a lot of people freak out when they hear this, right? They think that, oh my goodness, this is massive changes going on here in religion. But there's an Episcopal priest. His name is Adam Bucco. And recently he wrote for the Center for Action and Contemplation. That's Richard Rohr's outfit in New Mexico. He's a Christian mystic, a priest. Check it out, cac.org. It's wonderful. Anyway, Adam Bucco wrote recently, many of our churches, synagogues, and mosques are freaking out when they hear this, meaning the Gallup polls, thinking that young people are no longer interested in the sacred. But to me, it is clear that young people are not necessarily rejecting God. They simply feel that many religious organizations are spiritually bankrupt, that they've lost touch with reality and are too concerned with money, power, self-preservation, maintaining the status quo, and having the right beliefs. And another thing that Bucko reminds us of is that big religion is really not listening to us. Big religion is not addressing the big questions. It is for this reason and many others that I don't think of the rise of the spiritual but not religious among our youth as a sign of spiritual decline, but rather a new kind of spiritual awakening. Now take that in for a minute. Because you know what the fastest growing religious group in America is today? It's the nuns. N-O-N-E-S, the nuns. Nothing in particular. That's what it is. And here's the other part about that. The largest portion of the nuns are the spiritual but not religious. Only a very small portion of the nuns are atheists or agnostics. So what does that remind you of? Well, in some ways it reminds me of this guy, because Jefferson and his colleagues at the time were rational. They were reasonable. They were scientists, but they pursued the sacred outside of religion. And here at Unity, we call ourselves a church. It's a 501c3, but it's always been a spiritual center to me. It's never really been about commandments, thou shalt and thou shalt nots. And Jefferson and his colleagues were men and women who were spiritual seekers who could not be pigeonholed. You couldn't put them in a religious box. So, was Jefferson an atheist? Heck no. Sure, he was called that when he ran for president. He was castigated because he criticized Christianity, called and talked about the corruptions of Christianity. Was he a Christian? Probably not by those standards in those days, and by today's standards, no way. If you cut up the Bible and question the divinity of Jesus, you're probably not a member of the club. What about a deist? Well, he had some deistic leanings, but he never thought dryly, logically, like many deists did, that God was a clockmaker, turned on the clock or wound up the clock, and then he went home. Was he a Freemason? No historical evidence that he ever joined the club. He hung out with them. He had a lot of friends who were Freemasons. What about Unitarian? No, but this comes the closest. And we know that Unitarianism sometimes is joined at the hip with unity. In fact, Unitarianism is what helped build New Thought in the 19th century. So they're close cousins. Here's what Jefferson wrote to Unitarian ministers about 8 years before he passed away. I trust there is not a young man now living who will not die a Unitarian. I confidently expect that the present generation will see Unitarianism become the general religion of the United States. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm still waiting on that one. You know? But here's the thing. Maybe that's part of what the Gallup poll is about, because Unitarianism in those days, and then especially 100 years later with the Transcendentalists, it became an even more free-thinking spirituality, not bound by organized religion, not bound by convention or commandments. And William James later coined the phrase New Thought, and he said that New Thought would become the greatest religious expression in America. Again, I'm still waiting on that one. But again, maybe that's what this Gallup poll is all about. Now, a word or two about Mr. Jefferson and his legacy, and I need to bring this up. I think anytime we talk about our founding fathers, we realize that they were men. They had clay feet. They had pockets in their souls as well, holes in their soul. Everyone knows that Thomas Jefferson was a slaveholder. It's only recently that Monticello has begun talking about Sally Hemings and the relationship he had with them. But let me say this. Number one, it's hard for me as a 21st century man to go back and judge an 18th century man by my standards. Secondly, when Thomas Jefferson wrote in the Declaration, all men are created equal, which I think is an amazing spiritual phrase. It deals with our equal brotherhood in the great collective of the Christ. When we think of that, and we think of that oneness, we realize that Jefferson wasn't speaking so much for the people of his time. They knew they weren't going to create an equal world at that time. It's as if Jefferson threw a grappling hook out to the future. This is a timeless ideal. This is an eternal ideal. This is the marker. This is the beacon on the horizon that you must point to. The arc of the universe does indeed bend towards justice. Maybe not today, but someday. And another thing that Jefferson did, which is remarkable, is he left us a legacy that talks about how important religion and spirituality was for him. If you go up to Monticello, which is just a couple of hours away from here, you'll see on his tomb that the most important thing to him in his legacy was signing the Declaration, writing and signing the Declaration of Independence. But number two was the author of the Virginia Statute for Religious Freedom. That's how important it was for him. Although curiously, when his daughter told him she wanted to become a Catholic nun, he demurred. He took her shopping in hopes that that would distract her, and apparently that worked. You know, Mitch Horowitz is a name that some of you may recognize here. He has spoken on the stage before. I hope he returns to Unity Renaissance at some point. He is, I think, the foremost authority when it comes to alternative and esoteric spirituality in the nation. And CNN interviewed him just a couple years back, and they asked him what he thought of the Jefferson Bible, and I think this is really curious. He says, "I wonder how American history might look differently had Jefferson's radical document come to light closer to its completion. It would have become one of the most controversial and influential religious works of early American history. They would have seen the Jefferson Bible as the manifesto of a reformist movement. Call it Jeffersonian Christianity, focused not so much on repentance and salvation, but on earthly morals and ethics. Not so much on salvation, on earthly morals and ethics." One of the greatest American stories that I've ever seen in my entire life, the story of John Adams and Thomas Jefferson. I only have a moment to talk about it, but here's what it means in spiritual context. John Adams and Jefferson come together to form this nation with the greatest, maybe best ideals ever known to humankind. And they have a great affinity for one another. They're like brothers until the 1800 election when they run against each other. And guess what? It gets really nasty. It really does. It gets dirty even by 21st century standards. And they become mortal enemies. But towards the end of their lives, they reconcile. And they talk. And they share ideas. And again, what I think is the greatest synchronistic simultaneity in the entire history of the United States is that John Adams and Thomas Jefferson died on the same day. Not only on the same day, but July 4th. And not only on July 4th, 1826, the 50th anniversary of them signing that blessed document. It's as if they willed themselves. It's as if they willed themselves to remain alive until that date as a marker for what this nation stood for and what it could become. Truly remarkable. Well, anyway, in the last few years of their lives when they were writing, they talked a lot about spirituality. John Adams himself was a Unitarian, and he didn't have much patience for the ecclesiastical hierarchy. They had problems with organized religions, with the Calvinists and the Anglicans of their day. And so did Jefferson. So one of his letters, Thomas Jefferson writes to John Adams, "In extracting the pure principles which Jesus taught, we should have to strip off the artificial vestments in which they have been muffled by priests who have travestied them in various forms. There will be found remaining the most sublime and benevolent code of morals which has ever been offered to men." There it is. Those are Jesus's words. Now, does that sound like unity today? Does that sound like the spiritual but not religious movement of today? Does that sound like the Gallup poll and where things are heading? In 10 years, I believe the largest group in the religious firmament in this nation are going to be the spiritual but not religious. America may be losing its religion. It's not losing its spirituality, especially if it harkens back to the teachings of great men such as Jefferson. 6 months before his death, Thomas Jefferson said these words, "I am of a sect by myself, so far as I know." Does that sound like someone who is egomaniacal, or does it sound like he's taking a page from the path of the mystic? This is the unitary path of the mystic. We are all bound together in the great collective. We all have a common destiny, if you will, but the unlocking of our own sacred mystery is our true calling. Each of us has a hero's journey, as Joseph Campbell would say. Each of us has the path, just like our brother Jesus. So, brothers and sisters, friends and family, is this indeed a blueprint for the mystic's path? WWJD, what would Jefferson do? In short, he would tell us to live a life of reason, rational thought, science, and philosophy. Let that coexist with your faith in God. Pursue the sacred outside of organized religion. And let the life and teachings of Jesus Christ constitute the exemplar model for living one's own life. Jefferson's approach was a deeply personal and private spirituality, yet it also provides a holy ground where all of us can stand. Let's go ahead and head into meditation. Whether you're here or at home, put your feet on the ground for a moment and just get in touch with two things, your breath and your heart. Great teachings of Jesus found in the Bible, found in Jefferson's Bible, spoke of the heart, where our answers lie, where we turn fear into love, and every day in our lives can take this spirit and know that everything comes to us for a reason, to turn fear into love. Alternative gospels may frighten some of us, but all the messages that have come down to us through the ages have an import, have a message of a deeper place that we seek. And like Jesus the Christ, who sought his hero's journey and turned to his inner light, let's take a moment to turn to ours in our hearts. Be still and know that I am God. This is the promise of the mystic's path, to have the mind of Christ, as it says in Philippians. Let that imbue our consciousness. And for this, and for so much more, we are indeed eternally grateful.